Welcome to the Windsor Podcast.
I don't know about you, but I got into this to help people. We need more openness and more transparency in government.
Here's your host, Mark McKenzie.
Thanks so much for tuning in to another week of the Windsor Podcast. Yeah, I'm your host, Mark McKenzie, windsorpodcast.com. To get more information, make sure to subscribe to your favorite podcast app. Amherstburg Town Councillor Lyndon Crane is going to be joining us on the show today. He also hosts his own podcast called Coffee with Craner. So we'll talk to him about that podcast and how it started, and then what life is like as an Amherstburg Town Councillor. He was first elected last year, so he's almost a year in as well. So we'll talk to Lyndon Crane coming up in just a little bit. Lots going on at Windsor City Hall. We do have a city council meeting coming up Monday, October 30th, and we also have Community Services Standing Committee on Wednesday, November 1st, and I'm actually heading to a conference this week in Toronto as well, the Ontario Nonprofit Housing Association Conference. And there's a couple different sessions that I'm actually looking forward to. One in particular has to do with religious-based organizations and collaborating with them for nonprofit housing. And I know that sometimes, you know, you hear people say, well, you know, we should keep religion out of politics and politics out of religion. This one, though, I find it a bit interesting because, and I've had conversations with some faith-based organizations, and one thing that some of them have in common is that they don't have a lot of money, but they may have land. And so I think this is a good opportunity where they can say, hey, we don't have money to put towards this nonprofit housing, but we got an acre of land or half an acre of land that we could either sell to you cheap, or that's our buy-in for this nonprofit housing. So again, I'm kind of curious to hear what some of the experts are going to be saying on this. And then there's a couple other sessions that are pretty interesting as well. It's always nice to go to these conferences to kind of see how other people are doing things. And I know that we have some city administration that's going to be heading to this as well. So looking forward to that. Again, one of my main election platforms was affordable housing. And so, I'm really looking forward to this conference coming up this week in Toronto. But speaking of, I mentioned city council meeting, which is coming up on Monday, October 30th. There is a lot on the consent agenda, but there's a few things that I think will actually get some good conversation going. One was the response to Open Streets petition. And back earlier this month at the Community Services Standing Committee, Councillor Joanne Geniak moved a motion, and it was seconded by myself. I actually asked for a friendly amendment as well, was to provide information related to options regarding holding open streets twice a year. So I want to get the feasibility and the costs on this because in case you're unaware, what administration recommended was that we actually switch every year, so alternate every year. So 1 year we'd have an east side route for open streets, which would include the Old Riverside, PIA, Pilette Village, Ford City, Ottawa, and Erie Street. And then it would go to the Downtown West route, which includes Walkerville, Wyandotte Town Center, Downtown, and Sandwich BIA. So again, my friendly amendment was, well, why can't we just do both every year? Why can't we do one in the spring and one in the fall? Or one weekend in October or September, and then another one the next weekend. Or, you know, we do a Saturday-Sunday thing. So I'm hoping, you know, that we can at least get some costs on this and really the feasibility. So, you know, I did speak with administration about it, and they said the biggest hurdle is volunteers, really, because a lot of volunteers are needed to put on open streets. But at least we have that conversation going. We can get that report coming back, and maybe it's something we can do. Maybe it's not, but I at least wanted that option to be out there, right? The other one was the feasibility of expanding outreach services and 311 operating hours. So this was moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Geniak, again, at our last Community Services Standing Committee. So mainly it was to endorse those improvements made to the homeless street outreach team's schedule. So improving their schedule, improved access to such services through the 311 contact center, because one of the biggest complaints that I get from residents when, you know, they want to call to get somebody help, you know, it's like homeless people or someone who's maybe experiencing an episode, is, hey, who do I call? I don't know who to call. So there should be one number set up. And that's what we're trying to set up, is that residents would be able to call 311, and then 311 would then be able to dispatch that call to the appropriate resources and services. So that was, again, something that was moved by myself and then seconded by Councillor Geniac. And I'm sure that that'll have a bit of a discussion coming up at council as well. But I don't see anybody not supporting this, because, again, it's a great way to, again, just get that central number for residents to call. And it's about expanding hours and expanding services. And then, again, Councillor Geniac added, we report back as to how kind of, well, we'd have administration kind of report back as to how the city would draw the various organizations together. So there's so many, there's dozens of organizations out there that are all doing outreach work. And so Councillor Geniac and myself brought this up at the committee, and we said, why do we not have all of these organizations at one table? That way, if, say, Family Services isn't working these certain hours, well, maybe the St. Vincent de Paul's working these hours, you know, maybe they're working at 11 p.m. at night where Family Services isn't, for example. I'm just, you know, and so we're saying, look, if there's organizations that are working all these other hours, let's have them all come to the table. They can combine their resources, and it's going to be a better experience for everybody, right? Because, again, we're better when we work together as opposed to when we're divided, right? So let's all work together for the greater good. And hopefully we can just help more of these families and individuals, right? So again, that's something we're going to be discussing as well coming up at council. And then there's the update regarding the divestment of the East Riverside Shore Wall. So I'm sure that'll be a pretty long conversation as well, if I had to put money on it. So all that's going to be coming up at council next week. And then, as I mentioned, we also have the Community Services Standing Committee, which is coming up on Wednesday, November 1st. Nothing too contentious. We will be discussing the Sandpoint Beach concessions. That one, I don't think it's going to be very contentious there. We might get more discussion on that once it ends up reaching council, as that was something that was brought forward by Councillor Marignani. And then moving the location of bright lights, that was Councillor Kashak who actually brought that up. But I know that Councillor Agostino was looking into that also. But it's just not feasible. It just doesn't make sense financially. It doesn't make sense safety-wise. It doesn't make sense to do it either. It would be blocking sidewalks. And I know it would be nice to have it going, you know, all the way down Olette Avenue to the riverfront. But logistically, it's something that I don't think we're going to be able to do, unfortunately. So maybe, you know, in future years, if we end up developing that, the whole, City Hall Esplanade project and all of that, then yes, maybe at that point we could end up moving it down there. But for the time being, I think, you know, we just leave it at Jackson Park. And, you know, I get it. Parking's a little bit of an issue, but hey, we figure it out every year, don't we? You know, attendance grows every year. My son, again, he's 9 years old, absolutely loves it. And every year it just gets better and better. So I don't see that going anywhere. Anyway, without further ado, we do have a guest on the show, Amherstburg Town Councillor Lyndon Crane, joining us this week. It's good to have you here, man.
Good to be here.
Okay, I know everybody always talks about how you're the youngest councillor and this and that. I'm not going to do that. What I want to talk about is that you ran for town council first time ever, and you garnered more votes than anybody else in Amherstburg, including the mayor, which is pretty incredible for a first, not only, you know, again, if we want to say someone who was only 22, but someone who ran for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. How did you do it?
Knock on doors, same way you did it, Mark. I was just happy to get a seat. I wasn't really at election day. We weren't worried about the votes. It was more of just getting on. I wasn't sure if I was going to be fifth place, first place, what was happening. But I put my heart and soul into it, and the results were what they were. But I was just glad to be on.
You kind of can't run being like, this is my goal, I want to do. I mean, obviously you want to win, but yeah, you can't go in there being like, I want to be, you know, I want to have more votes than anybody else.
Yes.
You're just hoping that you have one more vote than that other person, so that way you end up getting the seat.
Yes. Yeah, campaigning, it's not difficult. Like, it's a lot of hours that you put into it, but it's just, okay, how can I get my name out there the most, other, you know, more than anyone else that's running, all different avenues of marketing and promotion in the community, knocking on doors, advertising online. I just kind of threw my name everywhere and just tell your story, because if you don't tell your story, nobody else will.
And it's a little bit more difficult, I think, for Amherstburg, because there's not a ward system, right? Where Windsor, at least, it's like, okay, I have this area here and I just got to focus on there. Where in Amherstburg and other municipalities, I guess, small towns especially have it, is like you're running at large.
Yes.
Right? So that's a big area you got to cover. So was there like one certain area where you were kind of like, all right, I'm going to focus mainly on these areas because maybe they have the highest voter turnout, or I know those areas better? Or maybe you don't want to give your secrets away.
Well, I mean, everyone, I think, would assume this. The concession roads are difficult to knock on doors, right? You have to focus on, I guess you could, everywhere is the center of town, but where there's a concentration of homes, obviously, is where you're gonna knock.
Sure.
If I would have just focused on the concession roads, I would have hit maybe a quarter of the homes that I did. So I focused on large populations. And then, the concession roads, if you can knock on them and you have time, excellent. Have somebody drive you around and knock on those doors. But that's kind of, the approach in Amherstburg is different in the city. In Windsor, you can really knock wherever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can, but you still are never going to hit every single door. Any politician. Mm-hmm. There was someone who ran against me who was like, I hit on every door. And I'm like, no, you didn't. Maybe you dropped a flyer in every door.
Yeah.
There's no way you knocked on every single door, unless you were literally just saying like, hey, my name is blah, blah, blah. All right, vote for me. See you later. And then you're running away, right? And we know that it isn't that easy. Like I've said this previously on the show, there's doors, and there were days where it was like 20 minutes at every door. It's not, and the experts will always say 2.5 minutes at every door, and then you got to move on. But you can't just be like, oh, timer's up. I got to go now. Sorry, I know you're in the middle of telling me a story about, how you hate the city and how this, this needs to be changed. But hey, your 2.5 minutes is up, so I got to go. We know it's not like that.
Yeah.
Right. So So again, anyone who says that they've been hit on every door in the ward or every door in the town, they're lying.
Yeah,
they are. 100%. So how did you so you have Coffee with Craner, if people don't know. So you host this online show called Coffee with Craner, wherever you get your podcasts as well. So you have the audio version, plus you have the video version, right, of the show. You've been doing that for how many years now?
3 years.
So how did that all start?
Pandemic. extremely bored. And I was missing out on the opportunity to network with people. So while I was in university, there's a ton of conferences that you can go to and learn from industry professionals. And I figured, why not just create a platform on my own, but connect with people that are hyper local. They're not from, other provinces. They're from the Windsor-Essex area, and provide a platform for young people like myself to learn from those individuals that have been successful in our community. Because otherwise, it's extremely difficult to book a coffee meeting as a young person with the CEO of a company, right? But if I can do that on a platform and hundreds of people could watch it from the area, it saves that CEO time. But also, it helps promote their brand too. So that's how I really started to get into it.
That's smart, man. And it worked out, obviously, because then you ended up getting an internship, which I know a lot of people know you ended up getting. So you interviewed Mayor Jude Dilkins.
Yep.
I don't know if, how many times this story's been told, but I know that the mayor, because I asked the mayor, I'm like, how did that whole thing happen? And he told me, and he's like, I went on a show. And after the show, I'm like, we need to hire this kid. and then you started like this internship job in the mayor's office.
Yes.
Which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I was there for 2 years. It opened my eyes to the world of municipal government, politics, and I started to get a passion for it and figured, why not do this in my own community?
So is that what sparked the interest in the political world, or were you already kind of interested in politics before that?
I don't know if I'm necessarily interested in like party politics, but politics at a municipal level, I definitely was. There was a councillor in our area, Don MacArthur, that ran in 2018, ran a great campaign, and I saw his ads on social media, and it felt like, okay, a young person can do this. It just wasn't, somebody putting their advertisements in a newspaper. He was out there on social media, and I thought, hey, I can do the exact same thing. So 4 years after, I decided to put my hat in the ring.
And it worked out
Yeah.
very well.
Yeah.
But you also probably gained a lot of experience working in the mayor's office, right? You gain that experience that you can only gain by being in the thick of it,
yes.
right? Because there's it's a learning curve. Mm-hmm. So at least I feel like at least you being there, you probably were ahead of some of those other new counselors who were brought on, right? Because it's like, oh, well, I kind of, you know, this is familiar at least.
Mm-hmm. It would have been overwhelming if I was not working in the mayor's office beforehand. Just understanding the intricacies of how a municipality runs, I don't think I would have been aware of that.
Yeah.
You don't see that as a resident.
Yeah, and there's no training really for counselors either. I know there's like some of that AMO training mm-hmm. you can do, which I did one, and I'm like, well, I didn't learn anything from this. Like, I don't know if it's just me, but I found I'm like, this offers nothing. Like there isn't that day-to-day training where it's like, okay, even small things like this is who you talk to for this, you know, so the city kind of tried to do something like that, but I was like, well, can you just give me like a one sheeter, you know, give me a one sheeter where it's like, all right, if it's traffic calming, I talk to this person. If it's a street light, I talk to this person. If, you know, we didn't get anything like that. And I think that's something that maybe municipalities should be doing too. Like, it's like day one, here's your tour. We didn't even get a tour of City Hall. Can you believe that? Like, you probably, again, you worked there, so I guarantee you knew where more things were in City Hall than I did. And I'm still learning because there's still places I'm like, oh, this is where this person works, yeah. right? Because we kind of have two buildings too. We have the 400 building and then the City Hall building.
Yeah.
And employees are scared. Well, okay, that's a lie. There's actually many buildings because then there's Crawford Yard, there's McDougal, there's and so you got to still kind of figure out where everything is and who does what.
Yes.
So is it, obviously Amherstburg's a little bit smaller, so maybe it's a little bit easier to navigate that, but did you find that maybe that was part of a learning curve too?
A little bit, for sure.
Yeah.
It's different in Amherstburg because of the size of our town hall. We don't have like an office for council to complete their work, right? We have
right.
council chambers, and then we have our CAO's, mayor's office, and then finance department and different things like that. So it's a smaller building, so it's a little bit easier to get around and understand where things are because it's not as big as City Hall in Windsor.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, we didn't even have offices until earlier. Well, we had little cubicles,
yes,
I guess,
yeah,
but we technically didn't have offices until a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. They finally gave us offices. So, I still find that is maybe one of the more frustrating things. Thankfully, we have assistants though too,
yes.
in Windsor.
Yeah.
So that makes it a little bit easier is that at least, you know, we have assistants who it's like, hey, can you help me with this? Or, you know what I mean? So again, that makes it a little bit easier. So what have been some of the bigger challenges so far? You know, we talked about the learning curve just now, but are there other challenges that you faced so far, again, being that first time counselor?
Honestly, it's something that I don't want to lean on being a young person, but you face a little bit of ageism as
yep.
as a young individual. I receive emails from residents sometimes, or you know, just comments from other people in the area about, you know, have you considered this, or, you know, you might not be aware of this because of your age. And, you know, it's a challenge to work through. And I think just by being knowledgeable about something and having confidence, you get past that. But at first, you know, people automatically assume with your age comes inexperience or unawareness of what's going on in, you know, certain areas of the municipality. So you face that a little bit. But other than that, no, it hasn't been too big of a challenge, you could say. I'm, you know, quick learner, and I'm enjoying the ride.
If it makes you feel any better, I get emails like that as well. And I'm 41. Am I 41? I don't even remember how old I am anymore. I think I'm 41. But I still get emails like that too, man. So like, I still get emails, people like being like, you know, I've lived here for 40 years and you may not be aware. And then I write back and I'm like, well, yeah, I've lived in the area for 40 years too. So I am aware, but I think I now look at it like, I'm like, wow, they think I'm young. Well, this is great. So you'll get to that point eventually. Once you're my age, you'll be like, you'll pray for the day where people are like, I know you might be a little young, and you'll be like, yeah, thank you. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I get it too. So don't maybe enjoy that a little bit.
I do.
Yeah.
I don't take it to heart. It's just something that you're like, okay, really? Like I had an individual say that, well, you're young. Do you really know how to negotiate? I said, well, what does age have to do with somebody being able to negotiate well?
Yeah.
You can negotiate well at 25. You can negotiate well at 80. What does that mean? Right.
Yeah.
So you hear comments like that, but every politician does. You hear the negatives. So that's the biggest challenge. Not being able to please everyone, mm-hmm. I think is a huge uphill battle, because you go into this role and you want to make everybody happy. You want to solve every issue. And the reality is you can't.
Yeah. And Amherstburg, while it is a town, mm-hmm. there's differences between certain, you know, there's downtown Amherstburg and then there's rural Amherstburg, right? So there's different, and I've always said that about my ward too, is that when people are like, well, what's the biggest issue in your ward? And I'm like, well, it depends. Like, there's South Walkerville, there's Old Walkerville, there's the Erie Street area, there's, you know, the north side of Wyandotte. So mm-hmm. I've said I have some of the richest people in the city living in my ward, and I also have some of the poorest people living in my ward. I have people who've lived here for 70 years in my ward, and then there's new immigrants that have just moved here from another country. So I'm like, there's not just one issue, you know, like maybe it's homelessness in one issue, maybe it's crime in another, maybe it's, you know, a playground or rats. So I feel like Amherstburg is probably very similar, right? Because again, depending on that little pocket, it's not as if it's one issue for the whole city.
And so Amherstburg was amalgamated in, I believe, 1999. We were amalgamated. So you had Anderton and other areas that were all merged into Amherstburg.
Right.
So you have different areas that, you know, some are still thinking were, you know, were the township of Anderton or, you know, Malden Center or whatever it might be, right?
But yep.
It's all one now, and we have to look at big picture, and it's hard to get past that for some people.
Buddy, I got people who still say, I don't live in Windsor, I live in Walkerville.
Okay.
Because my father-in-law is one of them, by the way. So I'm not like making fun, but my father-in-law still puts Walkerville, Ontario as his mailing address, refuses to put Windsor.
That'll confuse Canada Post.
But it still goes, I guess Canada Post still will like accept that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that until he told me this, you know, 12 years ago or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, when I first met him. And I'm like, all right, this guy's a little quirky here. But but then you find out that there's a lot of people who live in Walkerville who are like, I don't live in Windsor, I live in Walkerville. Mm-hmm. Right. Because it's just that heritage, and it's old school, man. Like, that's just how it is. And I'm like, you know, it was amalgamated like 100 years ago, whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's people that do that. I got a, speaking of amalgamation, and actually, I'm kind of curious what your take on amalgamation is, because I had a ward meeting a week or two ago, and yeah, one of the residents said, so when's Windsor going to finally, you know, force amalgamation with Tecumseh and Amherstburg and LaSalle? And I'm like, like, it's not up to Windsor. I mean, it's up to the province. It's up to the province. And like, and hey, they tried it, you know, 30 years ago, and Tecumseh and, you know, Belt River, and nobody wanted to. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but what's your opinion? Do you think eventually it's going to happen? I mean, Amherstburg, a good example. You already have Windsor Police out there, right? Mm-hmm. So we are sharing some services already.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be up to the province. It's hard to predict that. Am I open to it? I don't know. What I'd want to make sure is that we don't lose that Amherstburg feeling, right? That's what residents care about, is losing their identity.
Yeah.
Right? That's the biggest thing. But when you look at it from a cost sharing perspective, maybe it makes sense. I mean, we see that with the Windsor Police. We see that with Transit Windsor being mm-hmm. in Amherstburg now, right? When we don't have the funds to implement our own transit service, you look to other municipalities to share those costs, right? So I don't know. Could it happen in the future? Sure, anything's on the table. Do I want it to happen? Not particularly. I'm not sure any resident in Amherstburg would want to be amalgamated and called Windsor or whatever it is, right? But when you look at when Windsor was amalgamated, you have, you know, walk, people still refer to as Walkerville.
Yeah. Right?
You live in the Walkerville area, although it's not, was it the, I believe it was the town of Walkerville.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like people, or Sandwich Town. People yep. still refer to Sandwich Town as Sandwich Town, not, you know.
Sure.
West Windsor, right?
Right.
Well, they do as well, but it's, you can still keep that charm. When
people who are, people who are from Sandwich still call it Sandwich. Everyone else just says, oh, West Windsor. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
So I don't know. It's up to the province. Everything's on the table.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the identity thing. I lived in Prince Edward Island for a little bit, and a lot of the old school residents there say that they wish that the Confederation Bridge was never built to get to Prince Edward Island, because they say once that bridge was built, mm-hmm. PEI lost a lot of its identity. It started getting, you know, the Walmarts, the superstores, you know, the big chains started moving in, where before that, everything had to be brought by ship. Mm-hmm. And it had that island, small town vibe,
yeah.
right? And now that bridge was there. Well, now all these big chains come in, they kind of ruin everything, right?
And the thing that it's difficult to understand is you can't prevent growth.
Whether right.
you try to, you really can't prevent growth. You can't prevent commercial businesses, large food chains from coming into your community. It'd be very, very difficult. But yeah, it's going to happen. More homes are going to be built. I don't know. I'm not sure what else to say.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because Amherstburg is going through kind of a boom, and the whole
yes.
area is. And I get it. I'm on Development and Heritage Committee in Windsor. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you're on Development Committee in Amherstburg or no?
So I'm on the Economic Development Committee, Heritage, and then also Chair of the Audit and Finance Committee.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah, you guys got a few different committees that Windsor doesn't. And
yes.
some of them are just yeah. have different names.
Yep.
But yeah, you get a lot of that pushback from residents who are like, and it's always, you normally get the same thing. I'm not against development. I just don't like this development.
Yes.
Right?
And so going on to the challenge piece, it's with development, it's difficult sometimes for residents to understand if something's being built in a green space behind their house and it's privately owned. I understand that it's difficult when something's being built in your backyard, but at the same time, that land was designated for, you know, if it was zoned commercial, industrial, residential,
right,
future growth was going to happen, right? So it's a tough conversation, and it's tough to help those individuals where they're, you know, they say to you, well, I don't want this building going up in my backyard. And from the municipality's perspective, there's not much we can do to stop it. So their opportunities to go to the OLT,
mm-hmm.
Ontario Land Tribunal, and petition that area from being built. But that's a challenge with growth, right? Not in my backyard approach, and it's not preventable.
Well, and a lot of residents don't understand that even if the municipality votes against it, so say we vote against it at committee, we vote against it at council, then it goes to, again, the land tribunal,
mm-hmm.
and the province, 99% of the time, will always just, they'll approve the project, right?
Right?
So at that point, it's like, well, it doesn't even matter. If we say no, the province is going to approve it most likely anyway.
Yes.
Right? So
that's the difficult part.
Well, and that's what I think, again, a lot of residents don't understand,
mm-hmm.
is that they blame the municipality, and it's like, our hands are kind of tied too,
mm-hmm.
right? So
yeah.
that makes it a bit difficult. But and I do sympathize with some of these residents, especially when I'm a sucker for, like, older people, like grandparents, you know, and especially like the old Italian ladies, I always say, because, you know, I picture my 95-year-old Nona, you know, and so they come in there and they're crying and they're like, you know, I can't afford. So one example was they had to, it was just off Tecumseh Road on St. Patrick Street,
mm-hmm.
so near where Piccolo's is. And so there was a development going in on that block. And because of that, all those homes there are on septic. And because of this development, all of these residents were now being forced to tie in to the city system.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was going to cost these residents anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000.
Yeah.
Right? They got to rip out the septic. You got to tie in. And again, you have these 80, 90-year-old residents coming and they're crying and they're like, I can't afford this. Like,
yeah.
I can't afford $40,000. Like, I'm on a fixed income. I can barely afford my home as it is. right? The cost of everything is going up. How do you at that point, like, and I couldn't, like, I need to sleep at night. I sided with the residents and I'm like, look, I know if this goes to the province, it's going to lose. And I know that the majority of the other councillors are probably going to vote in favor of this development. I can't. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm like, look, I get that it's against policy, yada, yada, yada. But I'm like, I can't. I got to support these residents. And I did it again. We still lost. But at least I know, hey, like, I didn't support that. I can sleep at night.
Yep.
But I feel for those are the residents I feel for, right? Or the ones who are like, I bought this piece of property 70 years ago because it was, you know, outside of the city. It was quiet. I get it. The city's expanding, though, now. And so even like Banwell, for example, used to be the outskirts of the city. Now Banwell, it's, you know, it's busier than my area almost now.
It's tough with the Drainage Act, right?
It is,
because it's the residents, if it has to do with drainage, they have to share the costs across all the homes.
Right.
It's not something that the municipality can pay for. Under the legislation, residents have to split the costs.
Yep.
Right? So it's tough. It's you get this massive bill. And I mean, as a resident, I would be infuriated as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and yeah, so I mean, it is tough. But then at the same time, you know, hey, if I own that property of land, maybe I bought it 10 years ago. I want to develop it now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also see it from that side where it's like the government shouldn't tell me what to do, right? Less government overreach. I'm dealing with that right now. For example, residents mainly around like Erie Street, Walkerville, Wyandotte. So I don't know if you're familiar with this. So residents want front yard driveways. If they have a paved alley, so access to their backyard, they can't get a front yard driveway because the city says, well, no, you have rear access, so you got to put a driveway or garage off your alley. Well, residents are saying, well, first off, the city doesn't maintain the alleys. There's no lighting back there. Mm-hmm. There's potholes, you know, the size of my car back there. There's crime back there. It's not safe. I want a front yard driveway. And the city's saying no. So now I'm going through trying to change that policy because I'm like, if someone wants a driveway in the front, let them have a driveway in the front. Why is the government telling them that they can't, right? So these are some of the things that, again, there's policies that I don't like because I'm all for, like, less government. As weird as that sounds, as someone who is now in the government, I'm like, less government overreach, less red tape. I don't know. I don't know your feelings on that.
I think we need just to make it easier for people.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, cutting the red tape, 100% I agree with. But I also think it's about having strong communication from City Hall to the residents, because there can be so much misinformation that's out there, and not being able to relay the you know, how the policy works or what the process is like to do X, it's got to come from City Hall, and residents just have to be, they have to be aware of it in just a simple way, right?
Yeah.
This is how I go about doing this. When we add the political jargon to it or fancy words, and it just, once people realize the process or believe the process is complicated, they get frustrated.
Yeah.
And they come towards us, right? But if it's explained to them in a simple way, it's less stress on us, less stress on them, less stress on staff that are working at City Hall. So communication's key.
I like that you're bringing that up because one of the big things we always hear is communication. And so it's nice to know that it's not just Windsor that lacks communication with residents. It sounds like it's many municipalities that just got to get better at communicating things. Because,
deliver a service, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah. And again, people, if you can get ahead of it, it solves a lot of the problems because a lot of residents, I think, just want to be informed. They just want to know what's going on. What is the process? Help me out here, right? Mm-hmm. Don't just be like, hey, you got to fix, you have an encroachment there. So here you have 60 days to fix it. And then that's it. It's like, okay, well, tell me how to fix it then. Yeah. Like, you know, because then it would help us too as well. So I don't want to keep you too long. I know you're a busy man. You also work for Joe Bondi, or I guess work with Joe Bondi at Dominion Lending.
Yes, Super Mortgage team.
Yeah, the Super Mortgage team. So I've known Joe for many years. Let's talk about that. How did you get into that field?
Yes, so I was looking for a role that was flexible with council, right? Because it's a part-time position, and we have meetings during the day, or I want to meet with residents in the morning if they have an issue. I wanted to find something where I could create my own hours, and this was the perfect role for me. I was also interested in sales, so I like that aspect to it, and whatever I put into the role is what I get out of it. So I, from a growth perspective, this is the role for me, right? You wake up every day unemployed, no paycheck, yourself being in real estate, right?
Like, oh, yeah, same thing.
It's a very rewarding role, and it's something that I definitely want to do for the long term.
Good. I love it, man. And yeah, I mean, that's why I got into it. I wanted the flexibility. Mine was mainly because I have a young son, mm-hmm. and my wife's a teacher. So I was like, well, I want something I can drop him off at school, pick him up. And again, yeah, like the harder you work, the more money you're going to make.
Yep.
But with this, like, again, now, and I'm sure it's the same with you, council takes up a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a busy job. Anyone who says it's a part-time job, it's not a part. You're paid less than part-time, especially when you're a town councilor.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's rewarding though, right? We don't do it for the money at all.
No, no. I didn't even know when I got elected how much money I was going to make. Zero clue.
I love it, man. All right. Well, we're going to, I know you got to go. I have a meeting I got to get to as well, but I appreciate you coming on the show. I'd love to have you on again. We can talk about some issues that are, you know, going on in Amherstburg,
yes.
and in and around Windsor and Essex.
Yep.
But yeah, man, great job so far. I know we've hung out a couple times. We grabbed coffee. We hung out at AMO,
yep.
Which was a lot of fun. Next year, it's going to be in Ottawa. I think even more people are probably going to go next year. I find I'm told depending where certain things happen, the busier or less busy they are. So it's like, it's in London. Like you have some counselors who are like, I don't want to go. It's only in London. Oh, it's in Ottawa. Oh, okay. Well, then I'll go.
Yeah.
Like, well, shouldn't
I'll
you
go
just...
wherever. It was a good time from a networking perspective. Like you met so many great people with similar challenges to you in their towns.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And again, you're all about networking.
Yes.
Yep. So make sure to check out Coffee with Craner. Where can people find that?
CoffeeWithCraner.com. Easy as that.
Beauty. Love it, man. All right, there you go. Lyndon Crane, Amherstburg Town Councilor. Thanks for coming on the show, dude.
Thank you, Mark.
Let's open up the Windsor Podcast mailbag. Your questions, comments, and concerns.
You can always send me your questions or concerns at mmckenzie@citywindsor.ca. You can also submit them online at windsorpodcast.com. And this week's email is from John, one of my residents, who's asking about illegal Airbnbs and saying, will the city ban Airbnbs similar to what Lakeshore has done? So if you haven't heard, Lakeshore has banned Airbnbs under their zoning bylaws in residential areas as a business operation. And they're actually exploring the possibility of regulating their Airbnbs under their proposed bed and breakfast regulations. Now, we already have something similar to that. Bed and breakfast requires the homeowner to be on site even during the rental period and only applies to two or more people staying. So Lakeshore, again, is now looking at putting this policy together. So they've banned Airbnbs, but I'm kind of curious on how they're actually going to enforce this. So the city of Windsor does have a policy regarding Airbnbs where you can have an Airbnb, but it must be your primary residence. And again, we're running into those issues as well with enforcing those Airbnbs, right? So primary residence can be established when someone complies and completes a license application. There's a number of requirements that need to be fulfilled and provided, you know, deed, identification, tax records, just to name a few. Now, the challenge, again, comes to enforcement on negligent homeowners and landlords operating these short-term rentals that actually don't comply with obtaining a license. And the problem is that when you go on Airbnb, you know, we can go in and search, but it doesn't give you the actual address of where this home is until you actually book that Airbnb, and then they'll send you all of the details. So these are some things that, you know, do make it a little bit more difficult. So I have looked into, hey, can we just ban Airbnbs as well, similar to what Lakeshore is doing? But again, it all comes down to enforcement. So even if it's fine, you can ban Airbnbs, but if you're not enforcing it, which even right now we're having a hard time kind of enforcing the rules that we already have in place. So I know some people love Airbnbs. Some people hate Airbnbs. New Orleans, for example, and this is going back probably about 5 or 6 years, maybe even more than that now, they were running into some issues with Airbnbs as well, and they were looking at actually banning them because they said it was ruining neighborhoods. You know, you'd get these investors that would come in, buy, you know, a half a dozen or even a dozen homes within a block or two stretch. And it was actually kind of ruining the characteristics of the neighborhood. It'd be like, you know, an investor going into Walkerville and buying up dozens and dozens of these homes and then just using them as Airbnbs. Well, the reason people love Walkerville, it's the charm. It's the people who live there. And so New Orleans was having the same thing. They said, you know, the cool thing about New Orleans is the charm that comes with it, the history that comes with it. And then when you have these investors go and buy dozens of homes, it ruins that, you know? Now you just have strangers living there who aren't necessarily from New Orleans. So it kind of ruins that whole character and you know, the home feel, you know, that unique feel of that particular municipality or area, right? So I know other municipalities have had issues with Airbnbs. We're having issues with Airbnbs as well. But if you are having an issue with an Airbnb, I always say, you know, email me. We can look into it. We can see if it actually is registered as an Airbnb. If it's not, then, you know, we can contact the owner and force them to at least register it. The enforcement part, again, is difficult because so if the officer can establish that, you know, short-term rental is occurring without proper checks and balances in place, charges can be applied. But the problem is, you know, you can't just barge into a home, right? You can't just be like, hey, we're coming in here. You can't just walk it into a home and confirm operations, right? So you got to really catch them in the act, and that's what's making it difficult. There's actually a house in my ward as well that some neighbors are saying is being used as a rooming house, and that they believe that there may even be some criminal activity happening there. There was recently a fire on the premises as well, so we were trying to, you know, get fire and building in there to confirm or, you know, what was happening, and we're having difficulty with that as well. And so we do have to follow the laws that are in place. And so again, and I've said this before, you know, the test pilot that we got going on in wards 1 and 2, the rental licensing bylaw, that's one thing that does give the municipality a bit more power to go into these homes. But now, of course, you know, that's turned into a whole legal issue. So again, Airbnbs, some people love them, some people hate them. You know, I've stayed at Airbnbs in the past and I've always had a good experience, but I can also see where, and they were never in like neighborhoods. One was like a cottage and another one was like in downtown Austin, Texas, in a commercial district. And I believe even the whole building was Airbnb. Like these investors bought the entire apartment building. And the entire building was all Airbnb. They were all short-term rentals. But it was in, a business district, right? It was like on the main strip. And so you weren't really bothering any other neighbors. So again, it was the whole building. So it's like, okay, well, it's all short-term rentals in here. And I actually kind of, that I almost like better because, you know, at least then, it's not bothering any of those long-term residents there, right? And I think these are some issues that we're going to be dealing with this term. Again, I'm already getting a lot of emails about Airbnbs. And again, if you do have any concerns, though, please email me at mckenzie@citywindsor.ca. All right. But yeah, if you have questions, again, you can always email me or you can send your questions through over at windsorpodcast.com. Thank you so much for tuning into the Windsor Podcast. I will talk to you next week. Make sure to subscribe through your favorite podcast app. And again, thank you so much for supporting the show. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Windsor Podcast. Find more at windsorpodcast.com.